thanks to our sponsor, Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, wouldn't you take it? Because our friends at Nintex want to give you a gift, the gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products that you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it how you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 380. Today, CJ and I are going to catch up on the latest news in the Microsoft Cloud, recorded live October the 8th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like the Microsoft Cloud Show, you'll love the Shift Happens podcast with MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation project. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably rise when ambitious people try to impact their workspace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag #ShiftHappens. That's one word, Shift Happens. Wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. Back to the show. Good morning, CJ. How's it going?
Very well. How are you?
Good. You, I have a fly in my head.
Yeah.
You see?
It's just on the right there. Yeah. No, a little
got
bit.
It. Yeah. It's kind of stuck in one thing. Oh, man. You know, we're not going politics on the show because people don't tune into our show for that kind of stuff. We would love to because we were actually supposed to start recording about 45 minutes ago. Instead, we've been talking politics the last 45 minutes. We won't bore our listeners with our politics because that's not why you tune into this. You don't want to hear our politics. But man, I tell you, it sure is funny that last night was the vice presidential debate here in the United States. And it sure is funny how, like, nobody is talking about the issues today other than they're talking about how this really clean room somehow had a fly and the fly landed on the vice president's very white hair and stayed there for a good solid 5 to 10 minutes. It's like, that's all anybody's talking about today.
Yep. Yeah, it was. Oh, the hashtags are epic.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it is. It does seem to be dominating the headlines, that's for sure.
It's amazing. I mean, the first election, the first debate, all you hear about is the fact that it was not civil and people were interrupting each other left and right.
Yeah.
This one you heard about, same thing. There was some interruption and running over time and not following the rules. And then this fly, and everybody's like, what? When are we going to talk about issues? When do we get to talk about the issues here? That's why I'm kind of tuning into these whole things.
Ah, dear. Yes, sign of our times that the fly was the most interesting thing. But yeah, not too bad. Actually, one thing that happened to me, speaking of bad stuff this week, you know how I've got this 38-inch widescreen monitor?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Nice, big, ultra-wide monitor. It was under warranty. I haven't had it all that long. And it's been doing is sitting on my desk, right? It's not like I'm throwing it around or anything. But it started developing these cracks through it. It's almost like cracks through the back of the LCD, and it was shining this weird light through. And it was bizarre. It's like it had started deteriorating or something. Anyway, so I sent it in earlier in the pandemic, and it took weeks and weeks and weeks to get it back from Acer, partly because shipping took a long time during the pandemic, and then the repairs were really long during the pandemic. Anyway, they apologized for it and all that. Anyway, it arrived back, and I ended up using it again. And then a couple of weeks in, again, just sitting on my desk, I start getting these vertical pixel lines showing up across the entire LCD from the left to the right, perfectly horizontal, like dead line of pixels. Right? And first it was just one, and then the next day it was three, and then the day after that it was seven. And I was like, are you joking? So now I've had to send it back in again. And this thing is not small. It's not like just throwing it in a $5 flat rate shipping box. I mean, this thing is like, it's massive, mm-hmm. right? And so the box you've got to put it in is humongous.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to send it to Texas to get it fixed, right? That's where their service center is. So I'm without my ultra wide now, and I'm actually quite upset about it, because not only is coding much tougher on without an ultra wide, I'm going to pretend like I do a bunch of coding right now, but flight sim without an ultra wide is making me quite sad. Mm. So that was the negative point of the week, was my ultra wide dying again and having to send it in to get fixed again.
It dawned on me, because I remember you sharing this with me earlier in the week. I too am having a screen problem, but it's not the one on my desk. It's one that's a little bit, it's actually quite a barrier, because I had to get, I have a Tesla, and the center screen, the main computer died.
Yeah.
And people can go research if they want to see it, but effectively I had an original MCU computer, which there's a known fault with the memory. Eventually it runs out of writes and it just dies. And so I had to get an upgrade, and the upgrade was either buy a retrofit of the one that was already there, or spend a little bit more, like another 20% more. And they do a complete replacement of the computer. You get a V2 computer, not V3 that new cars have, because I have the old autopilot hardware, but a new computer, significantly faster. You also get two new screens, because the older screens, the cabling doesn't work with the newer computer. So anyway, I got a new screen that goes behind on the driver's dash, the instrument cluster, and then the one that's the touch screen, the center console one. Well, man, it's now been about 3 weeks since they've replaced it, and almost right away, and it's been going on since then, the center screen just locks up and doesn't respond to input. And that's a very, very much a blocker, because that is the only way that you can put your PIN number in. So like on a Tesla, we have PIN numbers you can put in so people can't like just steal the key fob. You can also put a PIN number to actually unlock the car, or unlock it to be able to drive it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we have PIN numbers set up on our cars, and then I also use it to change your profile. Well, my son drives this car, as this is learning car as well, and before anybody gets on my case about it, I mean, I get it. I don't like the fact that he's learning in a Tesla, but all we have is a Tesla. We don't have anything else, yeah. So it's our only choice.
You just go buy him a $500 beta from down the road and get him to learn a stick shift, do it properly, AC.
That's what he wants, is a stick shift. So, but he's actually going to get a hybrid instead. he's probably going to get my sister-in-law's hybrid. Anyway, yeah, so I can't, like when you get the car, a lot of times you sit there and just like bang on the screen, nothing happens. Yeah. Sometimes it starts working. Thankfully, the Tesla app, you can do keyless start. So I can go on my phone and I can do keyless start. And it still works. I can control the volume from the steering wheel, and I can do some stuff, but I can't change the profile, which means that I'm sitting much closer to the steering wheel, and gotcha. I'm sitting much higher up when he's driving. And then he's got his profile set to drive a certain way, so the car feels differently. And it's like,
You know what I'm going to ask, right? Mm. Have you rebooted it?
Yeah, that's the best way to fix it, actually. But it takes
it
about...
It does fix it?
Yeah, that will immediately fix it, but the reboot is like a Windows 10 reboot. It's not like a Mac reboot. Like gotcha. A Mac reboot's like gotcha. Instantaneous. A Windows 10 reboot's like, you know, hold on, this won't take long.
Yeah, exactly. And lose all your Windows.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. It takes about a minute or two to go through that reboot, which is a pain, but I've got an appointment for them to fix it. It's the problem is they're backed up. And so I got to wait probably till the end of the month, and it sucks. But yeah. I hear you on the screen thing, man. It's a pain in the ass.
Man, that sucks. That sucks. Sorry to hear you having it.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Both got screen problems.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, last week, we sat down, we talked to Karan from the Oracle Cloud, got some really good feedback from that interview. That was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And
me too.
Our listeners seemed to really like it as well, because it was like, I didn't want to say this when we tweeted it out, but we had a lot of people go like, Oracle has a cloud, or Oracle's relevant.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons I liked doing that episode, because it was like, I knew a lot of people had that reaction. So it was, yes, they're still relevant. They're still around. In fact, I'm going to talk about them at the end of the show, but it was a really good interview. I really enjoyed that.
I know we've given Oracle jip in the past from time to time, and and fair enough, they deserve it from time to time, but it was quite eye-opening to, at least for me, to hear how seriously they're taking it, what they're doing in the space, how they're going to be a bit different from others, and whether you like them or not, that's really good for our industry. So yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation. And I actually had a follow-up coffee with Karan yesterday.
Oh, cool.
A socially distanced, masked coffee. not far from where we live. He lives pretty close. So it's good to catch up with him. But yeah, I appreciated him coming on the show and talking to us about it.
Yeah, I wanted to say it a little bit in the show, and then I decided I didn't want to say it because I don't know if that's a way that they would want to portray it. But I mean, it was nice to see it wasn't another plus one public cloud, that they totally have a very unique, different offering to it. He was owning it. Oracle owns it in terms of just, you know, hey, we're different. Here's how we're different. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. And it's cool to see that it's a different option. But
totally.
At any rate.
It was good. And, you know, whether I probably won't be the first person lining up to go build stuff on Oracle Cloud just because of my area of expertise and where I work and stuff, but knowing more about it and knowing what customers are looking at and things like that can certainly help.
A friend of mine was immediately interested when he heard about it. He's big into like computer vision. And I told him, I was like, you might want to go listen to this and hear how they do things that are different. And he's very interested in looking into it because he can get down to the metal on those GPUs and the stuff. So it'd be cool. I'm curious to see what he ends up doing with it. But
yeah.
At any rate, hey, today we got a little bit of news we want to run through, catch up on some stuff that has happened in the business, the Microsoft Cloud business. So why don't you say we dive into some news today?
Perfect.
This episode is sponsored by ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admins control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations, and a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit ShareGate.com/overcast_CS. This podcast is brought to you by Raygun.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy application experience for your customers? With Raygun Application Performance Monitoring, you have all the information you need at your fingertips to find and fix errors and performance problems across your tech stack down to the line of code. With Raygun, monitor the impact of your performance improvements, quickly identify and resolve issues, and see how your code performs in the hands of your customers, saving you time, money, and sanity. I've personally used Raygun and Hyperfish for the last 4 years to help me sleep better at night, knowing the customers we've worked so hard to get are having a great experience. We use Raygun to alert engineers proactively so that we can be the ones to tell customers when we've fixed the problem instead of them calling us to say something's wrong. Raygun.com is my secret weapon in shipping high-quality code. Check it out at Raygun.com and get up and running in minutes.
And we're back. Okay, CJ, the first thing that I want to cover is it's not some good news of some stuff that's gone on lately. And it's been about a couple outages that we've seen from the Microsoft Cloud in the last, I guess, 2-ish weeks or so. One of them, it was right after our interview with Jeff Teper. They referred to it. There's one that was like a Microsoft Outlook was down for a little bit. And then there was another one that was pretty much knocked out Teams and a whole bunch of stuff and authentication.
It was an auth one, right?
Yeah, it looked like it was an auth one, which is weird because you see that like Microsoft 365 status puts it out and they make it seem like it's a Microsoft 365 problem. But when you kind of peel back the onion a little bit, it's like, oh no, this is something a lot worse. And then yet again, just last night, there was another outage that was related to Azure. I think it was networking and storage that kicked off last night as well. So it's been a bit of a rough 2 weeks for the cloudy guys over in Redmond.
Certainly has. Yeah, the auth one really, really screwed things up. I learned about it as I was booted out of Teams right before a meeting that I had to get on and was scrambling around trying to figure out how to join this meeting, because my main machine had just been booted out of Teams and was asking me to re-authenticate. And I'd go into re-authentication loop and it would, you know, you'd authenticate, nothing would happen and it would fail. And then you'd re-authenticate, nothing would happen and it would fail. So yeah, that got me square in the face, that one. The Outlook one, I didn't notice, must have not been using it at the time. But yeah, it's not been a good series of outages. The AD one, or the Azure AD one, the auth one, I assume it was Azure AD, was quite interesting because they'd made a change that had rolled out and had broken things, right? And then they rolled back the change and it didn't improve things.
Yes. I watched the tweets were funny. It was like, we've mitigated, we've rolled back the change. Like, but we're not seeing an increase in success logins. We're still looking into this.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they were, you know, pedaling pretty fast, but it wasn't improving things. But they got there in the end. But man, yeah,
you get the
it
one
just
guys.
Goes to show like how much that stuff impacts, right? How much it takes down when it goes wrong. So, yeah, it was pretty nasty.
Somebody was kind of a little bit of pushback on us when I posted something in a little private group that we're in, and they pushed back and like, you know, it's really hard to run a big service like this. And so from time to time, you are going to see things like this pop up. Like, yeah, but I mean, I get some of that, but auth is, I get that it's complicated, but it's a pretty simple and core thing. And if everybody takes a dependency on it, I would think that it seems to me it happens more often than it should. And, you know, I'd love to see, you and I are more, have more visibility into the Microsoft side. And I do pay attention to what happens on the Google side and on the Amazon side. But, you know, I don't see the same number of issues pop up with them that I do with Azure AD. And maybe that's just my perception and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's not real facts. Maybe those are just my alternative facts. But I know it'd be nice to see, you know, real analysis of that.
Yeah, I can't say I use Google Auth all that much, right? Periodically, right? But I'd probably miss outages if they were happening. Microsoft is opening a new data center region in Arizona coming in 2021. As part of, there's a blog post we'll link to here which talks about it, but you know how Microsoft's committed to being carbon negative by 2030?
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of one of their new data centers that they're building with that target in mind. So, for example, they're teaming up with some solar panel providers, or collaborating with a company called First Solar in Arizona around throwing panels on the top of their data centers, I imagine, and, you know, offsetting the energy use of the new region and all those kinds of things. Actually, one thing that springs to mind is I've been playing Flight Sim, and one of the they call them bush trips, right? They're sort of these hops all around the country that you can go on. And one of them goes past the area where the Tesla Gigafactory is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Nevada or California? I can't remember.
Gigafactory is in Nevada, Reno.
Yeah, so it must be near there. And I must have flown past there. But it's fascinating because you see this huge building and it's got all these solar panels on the top of, on the roof of. And anyway, I just thought it was interesting.
Mm.
So yeah, and actually, that's right. I think Rackspace have a data center nearby, and there's a big Walmart distribution center nearby and an Amazon distribution center. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, but they're all clustered in this big freeway intersection. Anyway, yeah, so Microsoft's building this new data center in Arizona, 2021. On their march towards carbon negative and putting more, you know, giving more back than they use, which is pretty awesome if they can pull it off.
This one was interesting because when they highlighted that, they're putting it in Arizona, and then they highlighted the fact that they're doing it to be carbon
negative,
trying to be carbon negative. First thing, it surprised me because I would have thought that that would have been an incredibly expensive place to put a data center, specifically around the cooling requirements. Usually it's, I mean, I get, okay, it's Arizona, so you've got really good solar power generation that you're going to be able to do over there. But I mean, at one point I kind of look at it and say, yeah, but you've got somewhere like Arctic Circle kind of stuff, or like, you know, up in Norway or in, you know, Stockholm, Sweden, where it's colder most of the year more often than not. I get you don't have as much light during the year, but it's just, you know, where that measure kind of fit in.
Right.
I found it interesting that there's like Arizona, and it's like, wow, it must be come an incredibly long way for how cheap solar power generation is, because it's going to cost a fortune to cool that place.
There must be that trade-off, right? They must have run the numbers and figured that out somehow. I don't know. That'll be cool. I like going on like Bing Maps and Google Maps and trying to find where they build these things,
mm-hmm.
and just seeing what's nearby, like seeing if they're on the bank of a river or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cheap access to water for cooling and things like that. So I guess I'll have to go hunt for this one.
I got a good update from Microsoft Teams that has started rolling out now, but it won't be fully finished until it looks like till mid-November. This is a Microsoft 365 roadmap ID 67138. And you ever done a Microsoft Teams meeting where you do the meeting and you record it, and then the recording gets saved to stream?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're in those teams where you're not a member of the team. You're not a member of the tenant. You're a guest. And so now, inevitably, every time there's a meeting recording, somebody's going to come back and say, hey, I can't watch this. Somebody doesn't understand why. And they come to find out that, oh, it's because it's in Stream, because the recordings are saved in Stream. And if you're not a licensed user in that tenant, you're not going to be able to watch the Stream video. So what do people do? They download the video and turn right back around and upload it to OneDrive or SharePoint inside Teams so that people can watch the video. A complete waste of space and processing and all that. Thankfully, starting now, they are going to start taking Teams recordings from meetings. They will be now stored inside OneDrive and SharePoint instead of Microsoft Stream. You can turn that on your tenant to have that be the default setting as of today or as of October the 5th. But by the end of October, meeting recordings will have support for also English captions that are being saved to OneDrive and SharePoint. Today, they don't have that. And then by mid-November, all new meeting recordings will be saved to OneDrive and SharePoint unless you delay the change by modifying your organization's Teams meeting policies. And then finally, Q1 of next year, no more meeting recordings will be saved to Microsoft Stream. In the Message Center notification, they keep referring to this to Microsoft Stream Classic. So, oh my God, are we going to get a modern experience, but I don't know.
You know, those Teams recordings, I have permissions issues with them every single time.
Mm-hmm. Every time.
Every time.
It sucks because the default experience is if you record it, it adds it to Stream and then it adds a comment on the meeting. Everybody who's in the meeting can see it and then they go to look at it and they can't get to it. But it's always the people who ran the meeting don't have a clue. Why you can't watch it? It works for me. Like, because you're in the tenant.
And then how to go fix it. Yeah, it's like, eh.
It's really frustrating because almost all the time, it's Microsoft that's doing that. And it's like, it's your product. I get it. You guys don't care about anybody that's not inside the Microsoft tenant. But this is affecting us.
There's another one that I hit, which is, you know, when you do meetings that you want to share with the rest of the company, you can't just take the link to the meeting and Stream and share it with the rest of the company. You've got to go in and fiddle with the permissions on it to make it available to anyone in the tenant. And the option's kind of buried. Like not deeply buried, but it's not a straightforward and simple thing. And I keep going pecking around for that option each time to try and find it. So yeah, anything they can do with figuring out who can watch a video and how to make it easier is good by me. Now, we have a fantastic sponsor called Nintex, who have been with us for many years and who continue to support the show, who have just gone on an acquisition spree and bought what is, I guess, historically at least, been one of their largest competitors, I suppose, in the Microsoft space, a company called K2 Software. So on the 1st of October, they came out and announced that Nintex is buying K2 Software and that they will they'll amalgamate to sort of be the, I guess, some consolidation and be one of the largest workflow providers in the Microsoft ecosystem, or the largest workflow provider in the Microsoft ecosystem, sort of bar none at this point. I guess maybe, you know, they'll be going against Flow, of course, but we don't know what each other's numbers look like stacked up against each other. But interesting to see some sort of acquisition activity in our ecosystem.
Hmm.
They've both been going at it for years and years and years with each other, right?
Like this is a decade.
A decade, right? It's been a long time. And they actually have quite different offerings. So I can see how it will be quite complementary, them coming together overall. But, you know, it's just exciting to see movement in the ecosystem and activity.
Mm, that's cool. That's a big...
So congratulations to Nintex, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. That's a big move in the space. That's a big move in the space. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Nintex is going to do now with this. I mean, are they going to... They just try and move everybody over to the Nintex platform and just kind of sundown it, or what the motivation is in doing this. I'm curious to see where this goes.
I can't imagine them wanting to do that. They're very different products.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I really have no idea, but I guess we'll find out. But I think they could be kept very separate and still be a one-stop shop for whichever kind of workflow you want to build and all that sort of stuff. So
I kind of wonder what the culture is going to be like now, because those guys have really been going at each other's throats for years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at least historically. It's been pretty quiet on that front for a while now, though. Like, I haven't really heard of K2 and Nintex going at it in the market, you know, visibly at least for a while. So
we have a pair of Microsoft Excel links. Now these are these are interesting. They're quite interesting. So I'm going to do one of them. I want you to grab the other one. So the one I'm going to do is actually about COVID. And the title of this was "A Test Error Should Never Have Happened." And over in the United Kingdom, in England, apparently they lost a ton of additional data, opportunity for a bunch of additional data. And so what was happening was when someone was creating a new spreadsheet, where they were recording all of these test results and finding when someone was testing positive, they were supposed to go do contact tracing and follow up on these people over a certain amount of time to be able to identify other people that had been exposed and should be notified of this. Well, the people that created the spreadsheet, they made a mistake, and they created the spreadsheet as an XLX file, not an XLSX file. Sorry, they made it as an XLS file, not an XLSX file. So they used the old format, which has a limit on how much data it can hold, compared to the newer version that everybody should be using, that Excel should really default to. And yeah, so they went back and they're like, we actually lost a ton of stuff, a ton of opportunity to go back and do contact tracing on a lot of people.
I heard that it even got worse than that, that they were, instead of using rows to record cases, they were using columns to record cases.
Yes.
So they hit the column limit, not the row limit in Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what screwed them up. And it reminded me of a story or of a situation I had years and years and years ago when I was working at Microsoft in New Zealand. I got a call from a friend of mine who was working at Weta Digital, who at the time were working on the Lord of the Rings trilogy in New Zealand. And he said that they wanted Microsoft to increase the size, the maximum size possible of an Access database. And it turns out they were using Access to record and manage all of the scene, sequence, shot, technical information, storyboard stuff for the movies, right? And they built this app and it was in Access. And that hit, I think at the time, I mean, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like a 2 gig limit, something like that. It was the old 32-bit version of Access, and that hit this 2 gig limit. And effectively, production had come to a grinding halt because nobody could get into this database to see, like, what are all the technical details of the shot we're supposed to be doing and all the components and all that sort of stuff. And so needless to say, Microsoft didn't tweak Access to suit their needs. But I think the end solution was they upgraded to SQL Server and then sort of did linked tables back to the SQL Server from the Access database for the front end. So I think that got them up and running again. Either that or they upgraded to like the 64-bit version and got a slightly bigger file size while they fixed it. I can't remember what their solution was now, but it was pretty eye-opening.
Yeah. Not good. Not good.
Yeah. There was another story like that where a bank was running their interbank reconciliation with Excel, and their Excel spreadsheet that ran the formulas for this reconciliation process was so big that they couldn't afford to reboot the machine or close the machine down because it took so long for the spreadsheet to open that they couldn't do it, and they were really worried. And I was like, yeah, you should probably do that properly. But anyway, it's amazing these situations that crop up, right, where people are running on these crazy cotton balls and string solutions for running really important processes.
It's fascinating when you see this stuff, isn't it?
Very.
Scary fascinating, I should say.
Along similar lines, sticking on the Excel theme, scientists are renaming human genes to stop at Microsoft Excel from misreading them as dates.
Oh, my God.
Because renaming genes is easier than getting Excel to add a feature.
Oh, my God. So, are you serious?
Yeah, they are. Well, they're not renaming the actual full name of the genes. They're renaming the short name of the genes. So there is a gene. There are a number of genes that fall into this category. But one of them is called membrane-associated ring CH type finger 1, which is abbreviated to March 1. So when people are going in and putting data into Excel with March 1 in the column, it's interpreting that as a date and formatting it as a date in the column. And apparently, according to scientists, and I quote, it's really, really annoying.
I would suspect so.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
No joke. So this solution, Brian Jones, if you're listening, so our friend Brian Jones, who used to work on a lot of SharePoint extensibility type stuff, he now runs the Excel engineering team. Brian, if you're listening, throw a scientist a bone, man. Come on. Give them a feature where they can turn off date interpretation in a column. And rather than they are literally renaming these genes. So instead of March 1 as the shorthand for that gene, it's now going to be called March F1 instead. So
that's so
yeah,
wrong.
There's also Sept1, which is now becoming Sept-in-1, like Sept-in-1, and so on. So talk about a workaround, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Like the impact that you had, what this problem or this fact that Excel is doing it like is formatting dates like this. I have the same frustration with Excel. Not genomes, but like I type something in and it tries to format the data type that I put in there as something else. It's like, no, that's not what it is. Don't do that. Or I wish there was like a global setting that you could set. Like, I always want my dates to look like this, but at any rate.
Yeah. Apparently it's caused all sorts of data problems. So this is their workaround. I might tweet this to Brian Jones and just say, bro, seriously?
Help a scientist out.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've got a couple articles I'm going to share, a couple links I'm going to share in the show notes here. And I was only going to share two until literally I got a news alert while we were doing the show about 10 minutes ago. And so I went and grabbed this other link and I've learned a little bit more about this. So there's a Supreme Court case. There's a case in the Supreme Court between Oracle and Google. And I'm going to give it to you in a nutshell. And if you're interested, you can go dive in and read more about it. In a nutshell, what Google has done is they used some of the APIs from Oracle and they had to, I don't want to say copy. I mean, copy may be correct, but they had to go through and be able to use them inside of Android. And if they had not done this, it wouldn't have worked. Java wouldn't have compiled against Android. Android's built in Java. So they had to do some stuff, like specifically something very simple, like the math.max function.
Gotcha.
This has been going on for about 10 years. Oracle sued Google and said, you can't do that. Those APIs are copyrighted. You can't use our APIs. Everybody's like, wait a minute. Yes, you could. Well, yesterday, this has gone through the courts. Google has lost the case a couple times. They've appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court. The lower court, the Circuit Court of Appeals, I don't know which one it was, but the Circuit Court of Appeals had ruled in favor of Oracle. So now it's gone to the Supreme Court. Yesterday were the oral arguments for this case. The article that just published while we were sitting here doing our show was on Ars Technica, and it says Google's Supreme Court face-off with Oracle was a disaster for Google. The Supreme Court justices seem poised to allow copywriting of APIs. And another part was an observer from Cornell Law School said that Google's lawyer did a, quote, abysmal job. This could have huge implications to the entire business that we're all in, because this means that if you use one of my APIs, I can sue you for it for copyright infringement. There's a lot of really interesting stuff here about that is like it's widespread practice that people end up doing here. They even use an example that Oracle re-implemented Amazon's S3 API so that their customers who built software for Amazon's cloud platform could easily switch over to Oracle's rival cloud platform.
Yeah.
When you map these different APIs and say, well, you do it like this, I'm going to do a similar API over here so that you can transfer your stuff over. This is big. Oracle has a case where they can sue Google for $9 billion. And if they win this Supreme Court case, then they actually have a case to be able to go back and go for even more because it's been 10 years and then go for all the profits that Google has reaped from Android by copying their APIs, which are now seen to be copyright infringement. And even more so with this, the other thing that's interesting about this is that right now there are only eight justices at the Supreme Court. If this goes to a split decision of a 4-4, then effectively it never happened in the Supreme Court. And the ruling from the lower court of appeals, the circuit court of appeals, is what's going to take precedent. So Oracle is going to win the case. There were amicus briefs that were filed by just about every major tech company you can think of, except for Oracle, on behalf of Google, including Microsoft jumped in on it, Amazon jumped in on it. And the only people that filed amicus briefs for Oracle were companies that were more along the copyright thing, like publishers, news publishers, Netflix, companies like that. So this is going to be an interesting one to watch. I put some links in the show notes for you, for everybody to go take a listen or go take a look at. Eventually, they will also put the oral arguments up that we can that you can go listen to. I always find those to be some of the most interesting. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
Definitely. I mean, it's big, right? This is going to affect all of us and, you know, in one way, shape, or form. There's all sorts of examples, like not necessarily directly equivalent to this, but very similar to this. We use APIs for everything. And take the Mono project with .NET, for example. This is exactly the same. Mono implemented all of the .NET, not all of them, but a lot of the .NET APIs, right? The core APIs, and re-implemented them and for cross-platform stuff, you know, years ago. That is pretty similar to what Oracle are arguing here. But yeah, I mean, could you go as far as to say, like, REST APIs, whoever created the concept of REST, if they'd copyrighted it, could they argue every REST API is in breach?
Oh, they'd make a fortune.
That seems crazy to me, but yeah, that's effectively what they're saying. So interesting.
I did also find the audio for this as well, for the oral arguments. It's an hour and 36 minutes long, but I put a link to it on the Supreme Court website where you can go grab a download of the MP3 and go take a listen to it if you're interested in that. These oral arguments are always fascinating. And if you understand tech, they're getting even better for you because it's really, really smart people arguing stuff, which is what's in a very respectful way, which is kind of unique right now.
Yeah.
So,
hey, one of the last bastions of hope. Yeah.
Hey, last thing I want to run through really quick before we move on to picks. I started publishing an article series this week. I've got three installments out this week. By the time this show comes out, the fourth one will be out, fourth and fifth one will be out, and then the sixth one will be out on Thursday, October the 15th, I think it is. So the whole idea is that this is the SharePoint framework. I'm answering the what, why, when, how, who, where, and I think I got it all. But I went through and I wrote all those things. And frankly, these were selfish posts. I keep answering these questions in different ways for people. It seems like every single week. And I have some of the blog posts that end up being some of the best ones that I post, or the most popular ones that get the most links, are the ones that I get tired of saying it myself. And so I just end up writing it and then I point to it. That's what this is. So far people are really liking it. So if you're interested in that stuff, go take a look-see.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been a lot of work for you. I'm definitely going to have a look through it. But good work. Yeah. Good stuff on getting it out.
Yeah. Thanks, man. So want to do some picks?
Let's do it.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show. All right, Mr. CJ, what do you have for us and our listeners this week?
This one's a little bit different. I know you're not much of a PC gamer, but there is a new game out called Star Wars Squadrons from EA. And it's probably, at least in our lifetimes, the closest thing we're going to come to flying an X-Wing. So you can fly TIE fighters and X-Wings and different missions. There's a storyline plot that you can play. There's also multiplayer, and it's got VR support. So if you have a VR headset, you can go play it in VR as well. And there are currently three reasons why I want a VR headset.
One
is for Elite Dangerous, one is for Flight Sim, and one is for Star Wars Squadrons. And up until now, I've sort of poo-pooed the whole idea of VR as, like, I haven't really come across a good use case for me that would warrant requiring a VR headset.
Mm-hmm.
Now I desperately want one.
This would, I'm curious. That's the way I've been with VR headsets. I mean, I see what everybody does with them, and I'm like, yeah, that just doesn't do it for me. I mean, slicing stuff like fruit and, like, it doesn't look interesting to me.
There's a cool game I've played called Beat Saber, which... the name's not the greatest, but it's quite a fun game. So it's on Oculus, I think it is. And It's pretty hilarious. It's quite fun to do with family. But yeah, go check out the gameplay trailer for Star Wars Squadrons and see what you think.
Cool.
It looks pretty cool. You don't need VR to play it, though. You can just play it on your PC. Or I think it's coming to Xbox and stuff as well. I don't know if it's out on those platforms now. Oh, no, it is. PC, PS4, and Xbox One.
Ooh. Cool. Very cool.
How about you? What do you got for us this week?
I got a pair of picks because they kind of go together. So there is a guy, there's a GitHub project. It's called Waveshare. And what this dude did is he was able to figure out how to use the microphone and the speaker and to do data transfer wirelessly, but doing it with sound.
Huh.
It only works with certain things. All negotiation is using the WebRTC protocol and then just sending audio tones to be able to transfer data back and forth the same way that you can with, like, you know, Wi-Fi.
Like an Ethernet cable or Wi-Fi, yeah. Huh.
I found it interesting because I'm in the middle of reading a book or a series called Fear. It's the Fear series or Fear of the Sky series. It's a great, absolutely fantastic book series by a guy named Stephen Moss. And the idea is that we're effectively Earth is going to be taken over by aliens, or that's the attempt. Haven't gotten that far in the book. There's a handful of books. I think it's like there's three books in the series. So it's Fear of the Sky and then Fear of the Survivors and Fear of the Future. And one of the things that the aliens can do is they can speak to each other instantaneously with no delay across ridiculously long distances, like across the solar system. And it's all done using tweeters and subwoofers. And how they've got a certain like subwoofer that they can take, and there was like a bug, like a listening device. They had a bug on this on a certain guy. They were trying to learn what he was doing, and the bug would sit in passive mode. And when he would go home, the bug would do a data dump to the tweeter that was buried outside the guy's house and do like a massive data upload that afternoon or that evening for them.
Gotcha.
And I just found it kind of interesting, like going, oh, this is kind of cool, like transferring data via sound, and then I'm reading this book at the same time. So,
okay, here's a dumb question. Isn't this just what we used to do with modems?
Yeah.
Like, except, you know, okay, so...
That's a good question.
You know, with Commodore 64, back in the day, I used to have it was a ZX Spectrum, a Speccy, had a tape player and the computer, and you'd push play on the tape, and it would, you know... You're right. It was basically modem sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Play the game into the computer, right? And it was sound off a cassette tape that was being interpreted as bits into bits and bytes and would make up the game. It would load the program. And so this to me seems like that, right? Where this guy is able to broadcast data across between computers just using a microphone and speakers.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like the same sort of thing to me.
It is, but over WebRTC.
Yeah, WebRTC just done through browsers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty interesting the way he's done it, and just looking through it looks pretty cool. I'll have to watch the video he's got.
Mm-hmm.
But man, we're going to go back to like modems and faxes, bro. I wonder what the bandwidth on this is. Like, I wonder what the rate...
I don't know.
The rate is...
I didn't go that deep into it, but I was like, I found it interesting.
Waveshare. Cool.
Yeah. He's got a demo and everything to where you can go take a look at it. There's only certain browsers that it works on. Like, shocker. It doesn't work in IE. It doesn't work in IE Edge. It doesn't work on certain browsers on iOS. But yeah. Like Chrome and Firefox on the desktop, it does work.
Huh.
It's cool.
That's cool.
Cool deal, man. Oh, that's all we had for today. You got any parting words of wisdom for our fine listeners?
Change your underwear daily and be good to your mother.
Is that what you mean? That's good. That works. That's good advice. That's very good advice. Copyright an API.
Don't copy an API. Well, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, it's... no, not really. I'm not full of wisdom today, obviously, but
yeah, that's very obvious.
Unlike my normal self, I'm just spewing wisdom daily. I'm definitely not full of wisdom today, but I guess... we will talk again next week, and I hope everybody enjoyed the Oracle episode we had on Oracle Cloud last week. Yep. And send us ideas for shows or people you'd like us to go talk to or topics you'd like us to cover. Again, we'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. That's not us saying we're running out of ideas. We need more shows. I mean, we have a bunch of things that we want to do, but we would love to hear. What do you want to hear? What do you like? Interact with us. Let us know. We'd love to hear. So,
like, did you enjoy the Oracle episode? Something a bit different that we normally don't cover and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Cool.
Nice one.
CJ, good seeing you again.
Likewise, mate. Take care.
Too. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find out about our show and grow the audience, and we would really appreciate it. If you got a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link to it so that we can play your question on the show. You can also subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, in the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You'll get notices of each new episode as well as the show notes sent directly to you each week. We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks for listening.